We've been talking quite a bit about the NFL Combine. It's in prime time. Joining us now to talk some more about that is an NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. He is a friend of the program. Remember, NFL Network is going to provide live coverage of the Combine today, 4 p.m. Eastern, with the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends. Lots to talk about. Charles Davis joins us. Charles, it is good to have you back. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Jim. Happy 2020 to you.
You too. You too.
Yeah, right, that's right. It's probably too late to say that, right? Didn't Larry David say you're not supposed to?
I have no problem with
say
it.
Say that after like the first day. So
my man,
bad.
I'm good with it. I'm good with it. All right, so you were part of the NFL Network's coverage of the 07 Combine, and I want to ask you about a specific moment from that Combine in 1 second, but how different was the Combine in 2007 from what we're talking about in 2020 with the workouts taking place in prime time?
Yeah, that's the biggest one, Jim. I mean, let's think about in the arc of our careers and our lifetime. In the NFL, we're seeing things happen that people said would either never happen or not be successful, or last but not least, no one would care. The Combine would be one of them, right? Why would you televise that? And who the hell would watch that? There's a niche channel called the NFL Network. Who would have enough programming for 24 hours? It's like starting the Golf Channel. Who's going to watch that all day? And the draft. Remember what Pete Rozelle told them? Okay, you can do it, but no one's going to watch this. Why would anyone do that? And look at all these events. They just exploded. They boomed. The interest is off the charts. I think I don't know how far away we are from a live audience here at the Combine, Jim, but I remember when I first started it, I was told that would absolutely, positively never happen. I've seen so many things happen that they told me wouldn't happen that I'm just waiting for the live audience to be next.
Well, that's the truth. You know that's going to happen. Charles Davis joining us. That is such a good point. All these things were not supposed to happen. And then I mentioned there was a specific moment in 07. Calvin Johnson was participating in the 2007 Combine, but the plan was he was not going to run the 40. You, however, were standing near him when the 40s were being run and you got the sense that he might change his mind and he might run. What gave you that impression?
Oh, Jim, it was unbelievable. I'll try and nutshell it. I was working for NFL Network as one of my first combines. It might have been my second, whatever it was. And I was working on the field. So I was like a roving reporter, for lack of a better term. So I was just down on the field, and Calvin came through. And it had already been announced to every team, to us on TV, the whole thing, that Megatron was not going to be doing anything physical. He was going to do the heights, weights, and interview with the teams and all that, and that's it. He walks in, and you know what it's like, Jim, here. Now you got the lights of the TV, right? Everyone's, all the scouts are piled on that side of the stadium with their stopwatches and their notebooks and the whole deal. And he was just walking, and I wasn't very far from him, okay? So, I got to paraphrase a lot of it because years later the language isn't going to be exact.
Right.
But he said something to the effect of, wow, this is cool. I think I'll run. And I was like, my ears, of course, went immediately 10 sizes larger. What? And I hustled over to him. I said, hey, Calvin, Charles did, blah, blah, blah. Did you say you think you might run? And he said, yeah. He said, is this all televised? Like, this is on TV? And I said, yes, it's on television. It'd be live. He goes, and all those are all the scouts and the coaches? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think I'll run. And then he had to get his shoes, because the story of the shoes I got wrong initially. The story was, everyone uses track spikes to run, the 40. They all think they're sprinters.
Sure.
He'd given his shoes away to, I believe, a quarterback from East Carolina. I believe his name was Pinckney. I can't remember his first name was Philip. I hope I'm getting it correct. Or James. He had given his shoes to him. And so he had to hustle over or send someone to get the shoes back from him. He went in and changed and went to the starting line. And then got announced that Calvin Johnson would run. And Jim, scouts, coaches, everyone, they're very taciturn, right? They're not going to give away a whole lot. It's the first time, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, there actually was a small buzz in the area, like, what? He told us he wasn't going to run.
Right.
And he weighed 236, I believe, and ran a 4.36.
Ah.
And the place obviously didn't go crazy because there's a decorum and you can't do it. But if there could have been, everyone just kind of jolted like, oh my God. And that was one of the big moments I remember.
That's awesome. That's such a good story. Like a 4.36, at 236, 239. He had to retrieve his shoes. Charles Davis joining us. So when you look at the combine now, we flash ahead to 2020. Is it pretty much a foregone conclusion in your mind that Joe Burrow is going to go first and that he will play for the Bengals?
It's a foregone conclusion in my mind that he will go first, yes. I hold out just a small thing about not playing for the Bengals. Because he said, hey, I'm going to go to the team that drafts me and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you notice he's not really saying, I'll be happy to go to Cincinnati and play. And I kind of get a little bit of a kick out of people who are, like, critical of him for not overly committing to that. I say, well, there's a guy named Elway who forced his way out of Baltimore. There's a guy named Manning who forced his way out of San Diego. And at the end of their careers, that was a small postscript. Now, a lot of that is because both of them were tremendous players. But if you force your way out of somewhere and you don't play well, then, of course, that becomes the lead story. But I think he's committed to going to wherever he gets drafted, which looks like it'll be Cincinnati. I don't know that he is going to buck the system the way that the other two did. But I wouldn't look down on him if indeed he did say, I don't want to play in Cincinnati. Okay, he would force their hand, whether they draft him, okay, you're going to play here or nowhere, or they try and make a deal and get the best thing they can. That's entirely up to him. Of course, that becomes a real issue, as you and I know, Jim, if you don't play well. But if he does play well and has a career like a Manning, has a career like an Elway, that really goes away, and the bitterness only remains in the city that you spurned.
NFL Network analyst Charles Davis joining us. You're right. You play well. That takes care of everything. NFL Network providing live coverage of the Combine today at 4 p.m. Eastern with the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends. All right, so what about Justin Herbert? One of the knocks on him is that maybe he's been too laid back. Maybe he's too relaxed to lead an NFL team. You watched him up close at the Senior Bowl. How fair is that criticism of Herbert?
I don't think it's quite as fair as maybe it could have been at one point. And the reason I say could have been at one point, because Justin Herbert acknowledged that with us at the Senior Bowl, Jim. We did an interview with him after one of the practices and asked him about that very question about leadership and interaction and, you know, being that front guy of a team. And he said, that's something people have talked about, and it's something I came here expressly to show people I can do and work on, et cetera. So there's a real aspect to it, but not because he has closed off from teammates, not because he doesn't want to be around people, not because he's above it all. It's just personality. And I'm going to add one other thing, Jim. This is my own opinion. Because of the way we run offenses in college, and this isn't a criticism because it's fun to watch what they're doing, but if you don't huddle and if you don't have the quarterback as the focal point in terms of guidance on the field, making checks, doing all those things, it's hard to develop that field general personality that we all grew up watching and hearing about. Huh. We produce guys who execute plays, not necessarily are the guys who are, hey, look in the huddle, look at my eyes. We got 85 yards to go. Let's get there. They run off to the sideline, get out into the field, look to the sideline to see if there's a check. Then they go and run the play. We're not developing them the same way. And by the way, if he is not a successful quarterback, it won't be because his personality isn't loud any more so than Marcus Mariota struggled lately and people say it's his personality. That's not the issue. His personality was the same at Oregon. He won a Heisman Trophy.
I think that point you just made about huddling up is really, really interesting. So, Charles, finish that thought. Have you ever seen in your time a quarterback fail in the NFL because he was too quiet and because of a personality issue, because they were too taciturn or passive? Or is that something people just get worked up about for no reason?
I think people get worked up about it mainly for no reason. Could there have been? Obviously, the answer is yes to everything. But I think overall, Jim, that's not the issue why people fail. Typically, that's that quiet quarterback that they say couldn't command a huddle or whatever. He probably wasn't very accurate throwing the football. Okay? I mean, we can go back through all
right.
That. Remember when they said Tony Dungy was too passive to win the big one? Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
In Tampa? And, oh, God, he's got to show more fire and more grit. I have a very good friend who at one point said to me, I need him to just tear down a yard mark. I need him to be more like Woody or Bo or something. I said, oh, that's the reason those guys won games? Because they're fiery and they hit cameramen and do stuff like that? That is not the reason. There's a lot of other reasons that go into it. Quiet people win games, all right? It's not the only one. Look, think about Gil Hodges as a manager of the Mets. He won. You know, I can go right down the line and do this in every sport. Quiet people can command huddles, can command rooms, can get things done. But when things don't go right, Jim, we really do as a society, we really do want to see the fiery person, want to see that it affects them and it pains them and this, that, and everything.
Yeah, I don't think it means that a guy doesn't care. Well, you only care if you come off the sideline and punch an opponent for getting an interception late in the game.
Throw your helmet. You know, you got to do all those things. I remember I was playing in high school, okay? I screwed up in a scrimmage, all right? And I took my helmet and slammed it down on the sideline, and next thing you know, some pile rolled on it, and the helmet was screwed up, and I had to get it fixed, blah, blah, blah. The very next day, all right, was the opener of NFL, and Kenny Stabler was with the Oilers. I think he threw like 5 picks that day. And after the 5th pick, he came to the sideline, and he took a knee, and he's sitting on the sideline, and you don't see the helmet go. You don't see him spewing at anyone. He's just, you know, stewing. And my father looked at me and he said, "So, he just threw 5 picks on national television.
Right.
And you see how he's handling that? I'd never want to see what I saw again yesterday. And by the way, you don't think it affects him? You don't think it's eating him up alive right now? You don't need to tell everybody that it's bothering you. You just need to fix it."
It's a great story. Charles Davis joining us. Snake was great. I remember early in my career, Charles, talking to him. He came into the TV studio and we sat down. Man, he was so cool. He was so cool.
He's
such an amazing player. He was the best. Let me ask you about Jacob Eason from Washington, getting a lot of buzz lately. Could you see him working his way into the first round?
Arm talent, without question, Jim. Arm talent, probably the best out of all the guys we're talking about. Taking it up to Burrow, taking it up to Tua, taking it up to Jordan Love, to Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert's got a hose on him as well. But this kid's got the best arm talent out of the top-tier guys, and I would think, I think in the entire draft. It's not a throw he can't make. Not a throw he can't make with authority, with dispatch. He can throw off the back foot from the opposite side hash and hit the other guy on the pylon on the opposite side. He can do all of those things. His question is going to be somewhere related to what we had before, but not because of not because he's not loud enough. But is he mature enough? Is he going to handle things the right way? Because when he was at Georgia, when he lost his job to Jacob Fromm after an injury and Fromm took over, it wasn't strictly because Fromm was a better quarterback. By talent, Eason beats Fromm every day and twice on Sunday. But the team really responded better to Jacob Fromm at Georgia. By all accounts that I'm getting from people I know, he has improved all of that at the University of Washington. But that's still going to be the question mark. In a sense, Jim, he's a little bit like Josh Rosen when he came out. People have questions about him in those categories. Maturity, the main one, and how he gets along with everyone. But arm talent, and I'll tell you something, Jim, tonight when he throws the football, it's going to be gorgeous coming off his hands. And I met with him earlier this week, and he seemed like a better kid. Well, better kid's the wrong word. He seemed like he was more in control and better composure than when I met him as an 18, 19-year-old.
Charles Davis joining us. I love that notion of tonight. It's in prime time.
And I know. Isn't that crazy? We're doing prime time. Oh, yeah, by the way, that would never happen either. We would not put this in prime time. This is not for the people. This is for us.
It's a blast. And then you've got the wide receivers, and it's a really good class. I know you're impressed with the class. You and Daniel Jeremiah caught up with CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma recently. How do you like his skill set? How do you think his game translates to the NFL?
Well, Daniel, who is our foremost authority on this here at the NFL Network, he's our number one guy. He has CD number one on his chart. I think he's got him ahead of Jerry Jeudy of Alabama. I don't think it's an appreciable amount, but he's got him as the number one guy. I love his game. I think there's anything you're looking for from a receiver, he's got. Physique, terrific. Personality is fantastic. Really, really enjoyed him. I checked with my guys at Oklahoma. They say, you know, no diva to him. In fact, one guy that I know a name that you'll remember Joe Washington?
You bet.
Joe Washington?
Yep.
Joe said, Charles, he's a throwback. And you know, when those guys say throwback, that means they put these kids in their category. That's a big deal. All right, that speaks volumes. People might think that's just a simple term, but for an old veteran like a Joe Washington who played in the 70s and the early 80s, throwback to them is about as high a praise as you can get. He's tough. He's aggressive. He goes up and gets the football. I think he'll need some polish a little bit in running routes just because the style of offense at Oklahoma and so many other places in college football is you have a route, but the biggest thing is find some open space and let the quarterback see you. You know what I mean? Maybe if you have to go to a more precise team, you'll have to learn a little bit of that. But I'm bullish on this kid. I think he's spectacular, and he's explosive, and a score waiting to happen on any snap.
Charles Davis joining us. He is sitting right inside the stadium. It's going to be in prime time. Charles, before I let you go, the running backs are going to work out tomorrow. Now, for a while, there had been this argument that it's just not worth taking a running back in the first round. Then a number of teams took elite running backs in the first round. Broadly speaking, it seems to have worked out. But when you see the issues, for instance, that Todd Gurley's having, do you get the sense that some teams might be swinging back to not taking running backs that high? Where do you come out?
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Jim. And let's just use the Super Bowl as an example. Damian Williams was the lead runner and had a big game for Kansas City when they won it. Some people thought he might have been the MVP of the game, undrafted free agent, if I remember correctly, coming out of Oklahoma. Okay, he'd been at Fresno State and transferred and did that. Look over the other side with San Francisco. Remember, they were a three-headed monster running the football. And Raheem Mostert became the main guy down the stretch. Another undrafted free agent who's been with six or seven teams, but was a monster in the playoffs up until the Super Bowl. Matt Breida, who backed him up, another guy who was an undrafted free agent. Tevin Coleman was the only draft pick, and he wasn't picked in the first round. So all in all, you're seeing across the board in the league, yeah, I think that a lot of them will look at the Gurley situation, the contract that he has with the Rams. That may make them a little more reticent about the whole thing. Frankly, as we start this process, Jim, and it can change, I'm thinking one running back in the first round right now, and that's DeAndre Swift from Georgia. After that, I think we start our run on running backs in the second round.
Hey, Charles, one last thought, bonus. I got to get your thoughts on offensive tackle Mekhi Becton from Louisville. Gigantic. What are your thoughts about him both in person and on tape?
He is an immense human being, Jim.
Huge.
He is a large human being. Someone actually asked him in the media scrum this week about swimming, do you swim or whatever, and he said, at my size, all I need to do is just wade into the water. I'm good. And so I thought that was a great answer coming from him. But I'll leave it to you. I'll leave it this way, Jim. John Gruden's dad, Jim, told me years ago that when he was coaching at Notre Dame, and you know they had those big offensive linemen back in the day, and he won the national title with Joe Montana and that crew. Remember Vegas Ferguson and Jerome Havens, those running backs they had. He was a running backs coach, and with that big offensive line, he would tell those guys, make sure you run with those guys in pregame and get used to the ground shaking so you don't trip and fall when you're running in the game.
Perfect.
That's Mekhi Becton.
He is an NFL Network analyst. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at CFD22. Good friend of the program. NFL Network is providing live coverage of the Combine today at 4 p.m. Eastern. The quarterbacks, the wide receivers, and the tight ends get it going. Charles Davis already there getting it on. Charles, appreciate you so much. What a great job. Thank you very much for that.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim. Talk soon, I'm sure.
You're the best, Charles. Thank you. Charles Davis. He's got such good energy for it. Great enthusiasm, great intel. And he's already there. NFL Network all over the Combine. He makes a really good point, too. Everybody said nobody would ever insert whatever you want to say about it. Nobody will watch that. Nobody will attend that. Certainly nobody's going to do that in person. It'll never be in prime time. Who gives a damn? As I mentioned about the NFL, the season has been over for weeks. The regular season has not started for months. And yet that's all we're talking about. NFL, wall to wall. Combine, CBA. It doesn't matter. I could do a show exclusively on that. His whole point, too, also about NFL Network. A network devoted to just one thing all day? Who's going to watch that?